Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank Ron for the extreme privilege of participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Always been my opinion, and I always hope so, that it's some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit with you good people. I hope I don't ever get it through my egotistical head that I have some type of a right to be here just because I don't drink alcohol anymore. That I'm entitled to everything that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959. I hope it's always a privilege to be allowed to be asked to do anything. And even more important, just to be allowed to come and sit with you good people and hear things from members of Alcoholics Anonymous who are walking this path like Dolores. I'm just glad to be here. I'm extremely pleased to be here tonight, fully clothed and in my right mind. Now, I don't tell you that for any other particular reason, other than the fact that the longer I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget, a little over 37 years ago tonight, I was crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary, drifting in and out of total insanity. Now, because of a loving God who has expressed himself through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around my hands and knees like an animal. And if I don't get nothing else out of this deal, I guess I can live with that for a long time. It makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and go along with the popular theory in the world today and tell you that's where alcohol took me to. Oh, I'd love to be able to tell you that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol did in my life, it kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I'm a misfit. I've always been a misfit. I always felt like I was just kind of not there most of the time. It seemed like to me that I suffered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body even before I knew I suffered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I've always been restless and irritable and discontent. I've always been angry and hostile and a little apart from. But I didn't know that was a symptom of the most deadly disease that's ever been known to man. And that's what I got. I didn't know I had it. I don't know whether I was born alcoholic or not. It doesn't make any difference to me whether I was born alcoholic or not. I was born needing an answer. And the problem with that is I didn't even know what the problem was. Now, it's kind of hard to find an answer for a problem if you don't know what it is. And so I was in my search and my journey, as far back as I could ever possibly remember, looking for a way out of this dilemma that I was in. Now, I knew I was in a dilemma. Nobody had to tell me that. I knew it. I knew that I wasn't like the people around me. I didn't like them. I was angry, and I was hostile, and I was bitter. I wasn't like my older brother. My older brother's not alcoholic, either. I didn't know that, either. My older brother's weird, but he's not alcoholic. I mean, he's a strange person. He takes two drinks and quits. And if you say, why are you quitting? He says, I'm starting to feel it. Well, I thought that's when you stuck it into overdrive. I didn't know that's when you knocked it off. But I'm not like him. So I can't blame my disease, which seems to be a popular theory today, on inheritance. Because my older brother's not alcoholic. That kills that damn theory right there. I am. I don't know where it came from. And neither is anybody else. And all the geniuses they have in the world today, trying to analyze our disease, and all the theories they've come up with, and all the years that Alcoholics Anonymous has been successful, nobody has ever been able to figure out, and they never will, why my body is physically different from most people who drink alcohol. They'll never understand. Nobody's ever figured that out yet. Oh, they got a lot of geniuses who are working on it. They even experimented with some pigs one time. How do you like that? Trying to compare us to pigs. Just because we like a lot of things more and more all the time. But I don't know that. I don't know what, I know a lot about whiskey, man. I know a lot about whiskey. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. They made it, and they drank it, and they do what people who drink whiskey do. They used to gather up on Saturdays and beat each other up. And that's what they did. They drank each other's whiskey and stole each other's women and beat each other up. And I guess whoever survived was the king for the week. I don't know how they made their little deal out. I didn't know. But you know what the strange quirk about that was? I always understood that. I always understood all that carrying on, man. I look at it, I didn't want to be like them. But I understood that. I had some type of a knowledge and understanding about that. You know, like putting your foot in somebody's belly. It's almost like a spiritual experience. I mean, really, every once in a while a day, I feel like being spiritual. But I don't know what's going on there. I mean, God, what bothered me more than anything else was that these same people who did that to one another on Saturdays put their arms around one another on Wednesdays and said, we love one another because we're family. And I don't know what that did for anybody else, but it must have triggered something inside of me because I don't ever remember uttering that word to another human being prior to coming to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or for a long time after I was here. It just wasn't in my vocabulary. That doesn't make me good, bad, or indifferent. It just wasn't in my vocabulary. Why it was, I don't seem to know. Why it won't be, I'll never seem to know that either. I don't understand a lot of things. I looked up one day looking for a way out of this dilemma, and I saw my grandmother. Now, my grandmother was a nice old lady. She lived till she was 90 years old. She never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life. Now, my grandmother wouldn't think it's been almost 36 years since I've had a drink of alcohol to remove altering chemical in my system. Grandma wouldn't think that's a big deal. Ha, 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 she'd say, I ain't had one for 90. I said, well, that's great, Granny, but there's a couple of times when you should have drank. I can tell you that. It'll help you out. Help you over the hump there. My grandmother, see, you always use my grandmother's house for a war zone. On Saturday, them crazy uncles and aunts of mine. And she'd get up on Sunday morning and she'd step over the bodies and she'd put on her new dress and she took off. She'd gone for a couple hours. And she'd be coming back, and when she came back, something happened to her. Something magical had happened to my grandmother. She was a little lighter in her step, a little easier in her being. She'd dance over these crazy people, clean them up and cook for them and sing songs to Jesus. Now I took a look at that. Stored it away in my keen alcoholic mind. I guess this is about the only place in the world you ever hear about the keen alcoholic mind. Do you know you'll never go to an Al-Anon meeting and hear about the keen alcoholic mind? But they don't say that. We say things like that all the time. And they say the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet. And they don't tell you how slick we are. But we'll tell you in a moment. You ask one of those geniuses what time it is, we'll tell you how to build a watch. And we don't have the answer for anything, we just say, uh-huh, that's true. You ever notice everything? I did. I walked through the thing on my way to the bathroom here at the coffee break or whatever break we had. Everybody's talking, nobody's listening. I mean, there must have been 400 conversations going on out there in the hall. And some people just stand around waiting for their opportunity to say a couple things. But you see, there is my grandfather in this little den of thieves that I lived with. My grandfather was entirely different thing from my grandmother. My grandfather used to take off on Tuesdays. He'd come back maybe a month later, whenever the money ran out. Grandpa would come back. And he came back in all various shapes and forms. Sometimes we'd have to go bail him out of jail or he'd burn a barn down. Or, you know, maybe we'd have to go get him somewhere. One time I remember he came back on a wagon. He'd been shot and stabbed going off the second floor balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. And I took a look at that. And I figured Grandma's got the best deal. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that. Grandma ain't coming back like that. So I had some other crazy idea that a lot of people seem to have. But all I would have to do is go where Grandma goes, do what Grandma does, and I would be like Grandma. I'm not like Grandma. My grandmother's not alcoholic. I did not know that I was bodily and mentally different from my grandmother. How could I know that? I hadn't been to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't studied this thing and had it driven into me by a kind and loving sponsor. What was wrong with me, the very nature of my malady. I had never read the doctor's opinion. So how would I know that I was bodily and mentally different from her? I thought all I'd have to do is go sit down where she sit down, wherever she sits, and the same thing would happen to me that happened to her. I'd just be jumping her up and singing songs to Jesus too. I went over there and sat with her in her church. Sat right alongside. Nothing wrong with her church, because Grandma got a great deal out of her church. I mean, Grandma sat there and got turned on. They're singing songs and Grandma's getting it. The guy sat next to Grandma's getting it too. And I ain't getting it. And because I ain't getting it, I'm mad. And the longer I sit there and they get it, I'm mad. And the madder I get, the more madder I get. And I don't know what's going on there. And I come to discover that I'm trying to get there. I don't know where there is, but I want to go there. Because it ain't where I'm at. There. A couple of weeks later, I got there. I'm sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house. I took a drink of my grandpa's whiskey. The next couple of minutes of my life is what makes me alcoholic. See, I'm not an alcoholic because I spent the next 20 years of my life creating mayhem out there in the world. I'm an alcoholic because I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. That everybody who drinks it doesn't have the same reaction to it that I do. They say, basically, if you want to quote statistics, that maybe only 1 out of 10 people who drink whiskey are alcoholics. That alcohol doesn't do for 9 out of 10 people who drink what it does for me. I didn't know that. Alcohol had the uncanny ability to go down inside of me and still the screaming madness that went on in there. It took me from the black pit of nothingness that stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living and installed in me some type of arrogance that said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what whiskey did for me. Anything that good, you don't give up easy. But that's not the thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death and beyond. What got me was the thing that just absolutely beat me into the gates of death and insanity. It's the thing that's limited to alcoholics of my type, our book talks about. This thing is called the phenomenon of craving. But once I take a drink of alcohol, I am powerless not to take the next one. I didn't know then that I was drinking to satisfy a craving that no human power or no amount of human intelligence could understand or relieve me from. I didn't know that. How was I supposed to know that? And so I took this drink. And 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School, which was to trigger a pattern that I would follow for the next 20 years of my life. Never knowing what was wrong with me, never having a clue what was wrong with me, I just wanted some relief from this nightmare that I lived in when I was sober. This madness that seemed to permeate my ever being, and then this differences and this apart from and this god-awful feeling inside of me, my God, what's the matter with me? Why can't I be like them people? What is this about me? I woke up in places I didn't want to wake up. I didn't understand that. I understand it today. I understand it because I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've actually been close to this thing next month to be 36 years. And I've been sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous 4 or 5 times a week for all that period of time listening to you explain to me what's wrong with me and doing what Dolores said. I hear what you say and I understand it. And I say to myself, yeah, that's me. That's me. That's me. I'm sitting on a floor from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old. I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine. The reason for that is because of the experimental stage of the Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. I'll tell you how bad it was. It never saw a grape. But it'd hang you without a rope. You don't have to worry about that. And I'm drinking this stuff, and it ain't quite doing for me what I wanted to do for me. And the guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, you ought to try these. And he gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, what are those? Will they bother me if I take them? Thank God they weren't X-Lax, that's all I can tell you. They have a whole new 12-step program, I guess, called Laxatives Anonymous. I could be standing here tonight as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but Mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was there. I hear stuff stupider than that around here. Work. Thank God it worked. Because a couple of years later, I'm sitting on a furlough from another reform school in that same street corner. And I'm eating these pills and I'm drinking this wine. And it ain't quite doing what I wanted to do for me. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and I ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. Because I live out in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes in contact with me. There's a reason for that. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and I'm a user of people, so therefore I'm a loser. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. And I'm self-serving, and I got an ego big in this whole room. My entire lifetime was spent before I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time after I was here, and maybe even a great deal of time today, I don't know, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth. I wasn't interested in you at all, unless you had something I wanted. And then when I got whatever it was that you had that I wanted, I cast you aside like so much trash and I went on about my business. I lived my life like that day in and day out. Not 1 week, not 1 month, and not 1 year. As far back as my memory will take me, I lived that way. And for a long time after I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. Selfishness and self-centeredness that seems to be the root of our problem, our book said. And how I know about that. It's lonely in a world where only you live in it. Lonely. It's damning if hell is the place. I lived there for 20 years. Because there was nothing in my world but me and what I needed. And the only thing that ever came between me and that was you, and I got rid of you. So any way, shape, or form I could, I got rid of you. And I wasn't particular about how I did that or who I did it to. And if you had something I wanted that would do something for me or make me feel better, I would take it from you. And if you got in the way, that was just too bad. And I didn't care whether I hurt your feeling, whether I hurt you, or whatever it was. That's just the way I lived my life. And so what happened to me when I came to in that cell in solitary confinement a little over 37 years ago, there wasn't a single solitary soul left upon the face of this earth that would send me a penny postcard. They were all gone. But they should be gone. And I didn't have any right to have them back. I still don't have any right to have anything back. Just because I was lucky enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959. It's in no great guidance of mine that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here as an answer to a prayer that I made in a deathbed in the Los Angeles County Jail maybe a year prior to that. Well, you see, my last time out, I arrived in the Los Angeles County Jail dead on arrival. And I spent 18 or 19 days tied down on a bed with somebody telling me I was going to live till morning. I weighed 128 pounds and I was yellow. I'd had 2 years doing to me exactly what I wanted to do to me any time I felt like doing it. I had all the money I could spend and all the things I could handle. And that's how I ended up. 128 pounds and yellow, strapped down on a bed with a medical doctor standing over the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, "Oh God, help me." Now I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened, because there was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down there." I didn't get up and wander off into the tulips, never to look backward again, walk hand in hand with the Creator. No, I just went to sleep for a little while. I tell you how sick I was. 2 short weeks later, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison to put me on the bed I just got off of. And there's a reason for that too. In the back of my mind, I knew the answer. When I can't stand life on life terms any longer, I can ingest something into my system and it's okay right now. And even though it's not working like it used to, I know it will if I can find the right combination of things. Because it did once. It's the only thing that ever had worked before. It has to work again. So I got loaded again. Short while later, I stood in front of a Superior Court judge, and the man sentenced me to 20 years in the penitentiary. And then he turned his attention to a woman sitting in the courtroom, and he said to her, "Lady, if you care anything at all about that child you carry inside of you, you'll never let this scum lay eyes on it. He's a blood-sucking parasite in society. He has no right being around decent people." And for the first time in my entire life, I had somebody describe to me what I always knew I was in words. See, I've always known what I was. I have never been able to hide me from me. I have never been able to point the finger out at somebody else and say it's their fault, because I always knew in the deep recesses of my soul what kind of a scumbag I was, because I had the pictures in the faces of the people that I had harmed sitting right there in front of me every time I was sober. It had nothing to do with anything. I was too self-centered to be able to blame anybody else for my actions. I knew what I was, and I was willing to pay the price for it, whatever it was. It didn't make any difference to me. I was willing to go insane. I was willing to die. I was willing to do anything. That prayer in my deathbed was not to let me live. That prayer in my deathbed was to let me die. Because I didn't want to live. I didn't want to go on. I'm 26, 27 years old. I'm through. Everything that's near and dear in my life has been gone. Every opportunity and thing that I had in my life was gone. I just could not go on anymore. I couldn't live that way anymore. I didn't know anything else to do. I'm alcoholic. When I ain't got no answers for nothing, and the answers that I've had are no longer answers, I want out. And it can't even die. And so my brain did what it does for alcoholics to protect itself from itself. It just exploded in that courtroom. Because I'd been sober too long. And I ended up the next 9 months of my life drifting in and out of total insanity, crawling around that cell. And that's what comes stumbling into your meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November, 1959. I can't take any credit for coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, none whatsoever. So how in the hell can I have any credit for anything that's happened to me since I've been here? If I'd have known where I was coming that day, I wouldn't have come. I wouldn't have. And if you'd have put a lie detector test on my arm and I walked to the door and said, "Are you alcoholic?" I'd have said, "No, I'm not." And the needle wouldn't have moved. I've been called many things by some of the leading psychiatrists in the state of California and the federal government has to offer. I've been called killer. I've been called a drug dealer. I've been called a white slaver. I've been called a lot of things. But I was never called alcoholic. Nobody knew. Nobody had the opportunity. It wasn't popular to be one. And we hadn't gained the notoriety we had, and we hadn't been incorporated on insurance policies yet. And there I was. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because the institution I was in let women come in there. That's why I came. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of next month. It'll be 36 years to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around ever since. Make any difference why you come. I pray, God, that you stay here long enough to find out what's wrong with you. The sad part about Alcoholics Anonymous is this. Most of the people here ain't got a clue what's wrong with them. Most of the people not coming to Alcoholics Anonymous today haven't got a clue what's wrong with them. Neither did I. Some genius somewhere told them they had a problem with alcohol. I can dispel that theory right now. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the 4th day of November, 1959, as physically sober as I am right now, stone crazy. Sound like alcohol. This is a disease called alcoholism. I didn't know that. I don't know what's going on here either. I sit in the back row, and my loving like to call my throne of contempt. I don't know what's going on here. Saw two big A's on the backboard, thought I was in an anti-aircraft brigade. I don't know what Alcoholics Anonymous is. How would I know? I said to this guy, what's this? I said to him. He says, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know how they are. They're proud of it. I sunk down in my seat. If I had some way to get up and run around, I'd have done that. But I was kind of locked in there. But well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racist stories. Because I would like a lot of people today, I just wanted entertainment. I'd probably just want another group of people to hate because I'd run out of them. Want another group of people to make fun of, probably, or to be different about. And so there I sit. Now you gotta remember that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, 1959, there weren't very many young pretty girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. If they were, they weren't sent up that penitentiary where I was at, I'll tell you that. These old guys got to talk with them and say she drank for a long time. Hell, you could look at her and know she'd been somewhere for a long time. She said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff, too. See, I knew everything when I got here. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so damn much about what ain't true, I don't know what is true. And there I sit. Got a piece of paper in my pocket from the leading psychiatrist in the state of California that said I'd never be able to live outside of the institution without some type of medication in my system. I lived outside that institution since the fourth day of June, 1961, with nothing in my system stronger than an aspirin. And that psychiatrist's been dead a long time. But if I could get a piece of paper like that today and come out of the institution, I could be a poster boy for Prozac. I'm going to be standing here saying, Rod, you're damn wonderful. Be sober is to be sober is to be sober is to be sober. That's what it is. I don't know what goes on in A either. I'm fascinated by these crazy people. I don't understand them. I couldn't understand. I don't understand people like this. I never saw people like this in my life. These people got up on Sunday morning, devoted their whole day, their time and their money to drive up those old back roads of this institution, 100-some-odd miles, to spend 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. People like me who sit in the back row, made fun of them. I'll tell you how sick that is. I'm sitting in the penitentiary. I don't know when I'm going home. I'm making fun of people who are leaving in an hour. Yeah, we got all these hipsters sitting around Alcoholics Anonymous wondering what these old fools are talking about. Hey, yeah, man, if I drank that long, I'd be on too. Good. I'm going to tell you a newcomer something I heard in a meeting the other night. I just thought it was beautiful. If you don't like what the old timers are telling you, don't worry about it. You ain't ever going to be one. I just thought I'd pass that information along to you. I'm more confused sitting in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and more sure what I ain't sitting in my early meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous than any time ever before in my life. Because I sit in your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear people get up at podiums like this and say, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything's just wonderful. So I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. Wish I was. God, if I could just be alcoholic, then all I'd have to do is not drink, and I'd be okay. But I'm not drinking. I'm as physically sober as that guy there, and I'm crazy. I can't be alcoholic. I had just described to myself the disease of alcoholism, but not alcohol. You see. Didn't know that. They said, get busy. I equated busy with being in motion. I thought the faster you move, the smaller targets you made. The way it was in my neighborhood, still is. So I moved quick here. Picked up ashtrays. Coffee cups. Back there and sitting in inventory point and died. Well, I smiled every once in a while. Saying to myself, I'm not alcoholic. I cannot be alcoholic. How could I be alcoholic? These people say they're alcoholic. They're not drinking, and they say get busy. I'm as physically sober as they are, and I'm busier than they are. And I'm crazy. I can't be alcoholic. That's the disease of alcoholism. It's got nothing to do with alcohol. It's just a disease. My problem is sobriety. I didn't know that then either. It's not drunkenness. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd have never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Can't do that. Can't stay drunk forever. My problems always seemed to surface when I was sober. That's when I went insane, sober. That's when I tried to kill myself, sober. I didn't try to do it when I was loaded. I was busy when I was loaded. Trying to get my face out of the oatmeal. And looked like nothing had happened. I said, I don't know what goes on here. I said to one of these people one day, hey, that's the way you talk, you know. Hey, you're crazy. You just say, hey. People look at you like you're crazy. Leave you alone. I yelled at them. I said, what do you get out of coming up here anyhow? Some type of an animal? You like to look at the animals in the cages? Ha! Well, kid, they said to me, when you can answer that question, you won't have to ask it. By the time you realize you don't understand what the hell they're talking about, they're gone. And I'm sitting there trying to figure that out. Jesus. People from the home are coming to get us. I don't know what's wrong here. I ain't got a clue. I ain't got a clue what's wrong with me. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, sitting there a couple times a week listening to you. I don't know what's wrong with me. I ain't got a clue. But see, I'm different. And I know I'm different. But I'm prideful in that. I'm prideful in my differences. And I didn't realize the difference is what kills more alcoholics here than anything else. You understand, my case is different. I don't have to do it that way. I don't know what way to do it. I don't know what's going on. I hear all kinds of things. Yeah, I know how you are, but I'm new. I got selective hearing. I hear stuff that I want to hear, man. That's all. I heard things like, good things start to happen to you when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. People start to recognize the changes in you when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm getting ready to go to the parole board. and I want them changes recognized. There ain't no change, none whatsoever. I ain't changed a lick, except I'm going over there on Sunday making fun of folks. But nothing's changed. I ain't changed. All they got is 20-year history of a blood-sucking parasite who's done everything to human beings it's possible to do to them, sitting in front of them, and they're fingering through it. 2 weeks before I went in front of the parole board, I got a letter from this woman that I was married to who had birthed my infant child. Said they were taking that child back to the Midwest and I'd never be allowed to lay eyes on it. Then I went in front of the parole board and they didn't recognize any changes either because they told me I couldn't go home. And I don't think from my entire life that I ever hated anybody as much as I hated you then. You had done something for me that blocks off and kills alcoholics of my type all the time. You blocked off the idea that you had gotten me to believe you for a period of time. And you discouraged me. And I went back to that meeting on Sunday. I probably was going to get up and denounce you in front of my fellow convicts. But I never got to the podium. I sit in the front row of that meeting, and I held an old lady's hand by the name of Myrtle Snyder, and I told her over and over and over again, she told me, honey, there has to be a reason for everything that happens to you in this lifetime. What she told me that day wasn't really important. The way I felt was. See, I stayed in that forbidden row with those free people that day, and the guards didn't come and bother me, didn't take me out of it. They just let me sit, because maybe they figured I'd just have another spasm. And for the first time in my life, while I held a hold of that old lady's hand, I had a feeling way down deep inside of me that everything was going to be okay. I didn't think it was going to be okay. I knew it was going to be okay. But I was also smart enough to know that it was not mine, that it was hers. And the minute I let go of her hand, I was going to be lost into the sea of madness one more time. I knew that. And so I held on to her hand as hard as I could hold on to it. I even walked to the gate with her, holding her hand. And as she started leaving the door that day of that institution, I said to her, Myrtle, what was this thing? And she looked at me, and she had the prettiest sparkling blue eyes you've ever seen in your life. And she said, honey, the answer to any question you may ever have in your lifetime lies between the covers of the book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to the book Alcoholics Anonymous to find this thing that I'd experienced holding that old lady's hand. And I searched for it. Book Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out that there was a program of action that I must follow. I found out there were certain things that I must do. I found out that I had to take an inventory. I wrote an inventory, and I sat down with a man one day in a room to do my fifth step. And in that room that day, the greatest single thing that's ever happened to me in my lifetime happened to me that day. Bar none. You see, coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and getting sober is not the greatest thing that's ever happened to me in my life. I've experienced more pain sober than I ever experienced before I got here. Emotional pain. My children being born and my grandchildren being born aren't the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Because without this program, there would be no children, there would be no grandchildren. The greatest single thing that ever happened to me, the greatest single event that ever happened to me in my life, happened to me while taking that fifth step. I heard myself say to that man that I was alcoholic. That's all. And from way down deep inside of me came this freedom that I carry with me to this very instant. I stand here before you tonight. I know what I've known all day. And what I've known for the last 30-some years of my life. I know exactly what's wrong with me. With me. I am an alcoholic. And I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I am not an alcoholic and anything. But I was an alcoholic and something or other. I could not have your program. The reason for that is I separated me from you. I was not like you. I was better than you. I was worse than you. I was smarter than you. I was hipper than you. I was slicker than you. I was not like you. When I became just like you, alcoholic, separate from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, it became necessary for me to practice the only program of recovery for alcoholics of my type in 4,000 years of recorded history. This is the only thing that's ever worked for people like me. It's the reason I'm alive. It's the reason that most of the time my life is on some type of an even keel. It's the reason that most of the time in the last 30-some years I have lived in absolute and total peace, because every day of my life I know what's wrong with me. I learned that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a gift from God, that my sobriety is a gift from God. The initial gift is sobriety. I maintain sobriety by the application of these principles in my life on a daily basis. Nothing special about that. Nothing special about me. I'm not one of God's chosen people. I'm just one of his people. I'm an alcoholic. I found out what was wrong with me. And so I cast a problem outside, left it outside, came in here and started living in the solution. Started living like one of God's kids, like dancing around here like kittens. Playfully, happily, joyously, and free. Because I know what's wrong with me. Somewhere in the Bible it says, know the truth and the truth shall set you free. Not hypnotized by alcohol. God, you hear that sick excuse in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time. Well, what do you expect? I'm alcoholic, you know. Bad behavior is bad behavior. Period. And it ain't because I can't say, well, I act that way because I'm alcoholic, you know. If that's true, you should be better than that. Should be. That's what I was taught. I thought there was a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I was taught. I came out of the penitentiary on June the 4th, 1961. Came out to a world I didn't know anything about. Only armed with this program in the first 9 steps of the program of recovery, the 19 months I was in this institution with you. Went to see my mother. She fell off the steps blind drunk. Picked her up and put her on a couch. Said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine, I think you should. I'd like to tell you that my mother came to Alcoholics Anonymous and got sober. She did. About once a year, my mother would drink like an alcoholic till she could no longer drink, till she was physically incapable of drinking. Then she'd come to you until she was physically incapable of sitting here. But not one time did she pick up the book. Not one time did she do anything but put her butt in a chair. 2 years ago, my mother got drunk and fell down and died. I watched that saga of the person I loved most in the world at that time, my mother, come in and out of these rooms, like I see all of you who've got so many goddamn answers you can't even sit down in the seat and pay attention to what goes on here. This is a matter of life and death going on here. This ain't some type of a damn social obligation that we come to every once in a while because we got nothing better to do. People die here. She died because she thought all she would have to do was not drink and put her butt in a chair from time to time. And she'd leave when things got uncomfortable for her. And then she'd drink. You want to have something tear your heart out? Watch that for 30 years. Or you stay sober. Watch that and see how much damn power you got over somebody else's life. Watch that and see how much your prayers can help somebody else. Watch that and see how much you long and hope and pray that somebody else can get rid of this malady just because you want it to be rid of it. Watch it and see how powerful you really think you are. I'm not powerful. I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I learned that by watching my mother. I don't have the power to get them drunk either. I don't have any power to keep me sober. Where the hell would I get any power? I came here powerless. Somehow or other I tapped into a power, but it's not my power, it's our power. And somehow or other that power keeps me sober on a daily basis. And it's contingent upon my maintenance of certain spiritual conditions. All I got is a daily reprieve. Kid that I sponsored looked that up in a dictionary one time. He told me that reprieve is a stay of execution from a death sentence. You see, if it's not a matter of life or death, you don't have a death sentence. If you're not alcoholic, you don't have to worry about a damn thing. Your life's not on the line. It isn't necessary for you to have to do any of these things. It isn't necessary for you to have to follow the directions from somebody thin, staying sober. It's not necessary for you to have to give a little just for the hell of giving it. Not necessary for you to come to these meetings and stick out your hand and make coffee and set up chairs and sweep floors. If you're not alcoholic, your life is on the line. But if you're alcoholic, I'll tell you about the invisible line in Alcoholics Anonymous that you better cross over. And if you ain't crossed over, then you don't cross over, you're going to die drunk. And that's the line from crossing over from being a taker to being a giver. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you don't cross over that line, you're going to die drunk. Or you're going to blow your brains up. And I don't care who you are or what your counselor tells you. That's the truth. And I'll tell you why I know that, because I've been sitting in these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for 30-some-odd years, 4, 5, or 6 times a week, watching this scenario played out in front of my very eyes. The Lord is up here talking about a progressive illness. It does get progressive. You've been doing long, total periods of abstinence. And the reason I know that's true is because I've been sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous all these years with my eyes open, not reading some book or watching some damn TV program. I've been sitting here watching the sag of life play out, watch alcoholics kill themselves and go nuts, blow their brains out. We were talking about it the other night in a meeting where I'm making coffee on Wednesday night. Guy was telling me about a friend of his, 22 years sober, stuck a gun in his mouth and blew his head off. He said, "What do you think caused that, Johnny?" And I said, "It's called untreated alcoholism." He says, "He hadn't had a drink for 22 years. I said, "I don't give a damn how long it's been since he had a drink. He's just been undrunk for 22 years. Disease of alcoholism kills people. Alcoholics of my type blow their brains out cold sober. Alcoholics of my type go totally insane. The reason I'm alive and well today is because I turned my will and my life over to the care of a guy by the name of Norm Alpie. Because I said in that penitentiary that if you would allow me the privilege of coming and sitting with you, I'd do anything you asked me to do. The only dream I had while I'm in that penitentiary, someday you'd let me come and sit with you. I never in one time in my wildest imagination ever thought that you'd ask me to do anything. Because I didn't feel worthy of doing anything. But I came here, and my sponsor, Norm Alpie, said to me one night, I'm going to be your sponsor. I said, "Oh, what's a sponsor, Norm?" He said, "Well, I'm just going to help you get things done that need to be done, Johnny." And I said, "Well, what do you want me to do, Norm?" He said, "Why do you ask me?" I said, "For Christ's sake, man, you just told me you were my sponsor." He said, "Johnny, if I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours?" I said, "Then what do you want me to do?" He says, "You do what I do." I said, "What is it you do?" He says, "If you do what I do, then you'll know what I do." Another one of them deep psychological ploys that most of the egotistical idiots who are stumbling in here today who got all the answers for everything say, "I ain't going to make anybody tell me what to do. That ain't what he told me. He didn't tell me to do anything except go to work. He told me to do what he did." So I had to find out what he did. Now, I can't find out what he did by checking with him every other month, every other meeting. I got to spend time with him. Got to find out how he acts. Not in meetings. How he acts in places that don't count. That most of us don't know how to act in. Around his family. On his job. With retail clerks and soda fountain people, and gas station attendants, people on the freeway. I had to be taught those things because I didn't know how. I had to be taught how to act in an AA meeting. I didn't know how. I just wanted to visit. He told me to shut up. I wanted to get up and move around because it was getting uncomfortable where I was sitting. He'd say, sit down and shut up. When I asked him why, Johnny, if you want to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't want to listen, it seems to be your business. You ever stop to think that maybe somebody else does? I said, no, it's happening. Because I didn't think so. Selfish, self-centered people like you don't ever think about anybody but yourself. Because if I was you, but I'm not you, you know, I'd sit still in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I go to, and I would pay attention to everything that's said from the time they hit the gavel till they say amen. I said, why is that, no? He said, well, one of these days, you're going to be out there in that world behaving like a normal human being, and you're going to be so full of yourself or the problems of life that you need to hear everything that was ever said to you in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you better hope at that particular time that that word isn't said to you, that some self-centered asshole didn't get up and stumble in front of you and you missed it. I am grateful for that. Because the meetings I go to aren't like that. The meetings I went to when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody sat down and paid attention to what went on there. Because they were interested in what went on there. They weren't just showing up waiting for the dance to start. They weren't just showing up because they thought it was a thing to do on Saturday night. Dolores talked about it. These people had a desperation about them staying sober. And even though some of them didn't stay sober, hell, the first 100 people didn't stay sober. Alcoholics drained. They drink because it sometimes it preserves their sanity. They drink because they haven't got anything better to do. They drink because they just need a moment of relief. They drink for all various reasons, but basically, it's because their disease called alcoholism is not treated with the spiritual malady and the spiritual answer. And the answer to Alcoholics Anonymous is being where you say you're going to be, doing what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. It's called commitment. And a commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous is a commitment to the whole ballgame. It says in our third chapter of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, you've got to admit to your innermost self that you're alcoholic. That's the first step in recovery. That's a big chunk of swallowing to have this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You have this killer disease called alcoholism that's destroyed more lives than anything that's ever been known to man. And yet that's what I have. And all I've got is today. I don't get to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous because I've been sober almost 36 years. Not at all. It doesn't give me any edge. I get to stay sober today because I came to Champaign, Illinois to do what I said I was going to do. So today I get to stay sober. That's it. This is my day. I don't have many other days. I don't have any yesterdays, I don't have any tomorrows, I got right now. I can't guarantee you I'm going to make it to my room without dying. Not at all. I live one heartbeat at a time sometimes. Sometimes I live in a world that I want nothing for myself whatsoever. Could I just live in a world? Just a happy little child. Guy asked me dinner, said, you pray? I don't ever know when I'm praying, when I ain't. I think I'm praying when I'm sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous listening to you. I know that's when I'm the closest to my God. Sitting in that chair tonight, listening to Dolores, watching that young lady come up here and get that book, that Andrea, that I spelled her name wrong. I'd look at her badge and still spelled her name wrong. I don't think that's the way you spell your name, Andrea. I spell it right. I'm an old-timer, you know. I sit right there. And what I come to Alcoholics Anonymous for, 5 or 6 times a week, I got already tonight sitting there. I just sit there. More interested in what they were doing or what they were saying than I was myself. For an hour, sitting there listening to the Lord, I was lost in her. And as far as I can perceive, that's as close to my God as I'm ever going to get. I was told a long time ago that nature abhors a vacuum, but God abhors a vacuum even more under heaven and earth. Empty yourself of self, I was told. You will be automatically full of God. Automatically. It's amazing to me how well I feel when I ain't thinking about me. A guy told me the other day, your mind is like a bad neighborhood, Johnny. You shouldn't go in there alone. I ain't never alone. Because wherever I am, my God is. God I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not my grandmother's God, though. My grandmother's God punished little boys who were bad. I couldn't believe in that God when I was a child. I don't believe in it now. I couldn't buy it at all. I don't believe in a God that finds people parking places. I don't believe in a God that finds people romances. A guy I sponsored one time called me up on the phone. Yeah, they are. It doesn't matter. He said, God took my relationship away from me. I said, oh, come on over. Come on over there. I said, let's have it. Well, you don't understand, man. 3 weeks ago, I was at the dance, and God gave me this relationship. Took her away from me. Months before that, I was at a dance, and God gave me another relationship. Took that away from me, too. You two, God don't want me to heaven. I said, you trying to tell me God's a pimp? He said, what? How dare you talk about God like that? I said, hey, wait a minute, pal. You don't want to tell me God giving you these women. When I did that, they called me a pimp. He went out and got some understanding sponsor. Thought I was cruel and thought God was a pimp. True. That guy gets charged for all kinds of things. I can look back on my hand and see the fine handiwork of God waving all through my life. But I couldn't buy a God that would favor me over anybody else. Not at all. In no way in my sick little mind would I ever be able to believe in any kind of God that would make me one of his chosen children. I was taught differently. I was taught we were all God's kid. I was taught by that by an old man who was the only father I've ever known that I loved more than anything. That we're all God's kids. All of us are. I am, you are. You are, I am. If I ain't, you ain't. And if you ain't, I ain't. He said that God's kids just wander around the world and try to help God's kids get things done that needed to be done. And they do it for free, and they do it for fun. He says, you can't find answers searching for them, son. So you just get busy about God's business. And someday you walk right through the answer. It's amazing to me. Hear people, Alcoholics Anonymous, say, you got to think to drink. You don't have to think nothing. Matter of fact, you're better off if you don't think nothing. All I got to do is quit doing what makes me comfortable right here. I'll wake up drunk. I ain't got no lock on this sobriety thing. I can get drunk. I don't know any alcoholic who can't get drunk. All I got to do is quit doing what makes me comfortable right here. I wake up drunk. That's all. Put me in the wrong place at the wrong time, the wrong set of circumstances, and one of them crazy feelings, I'll be drunk. But the first drink in me is not a thought. The first drink in me is a reaction. If I'm where it's at, I'm going to be drunk. I've been that crazy. I've been that out of sorts. I've been that full of me. So I don't go where it's at. I don't have whiskey in my house. I don't have guns in my house either. And the reason I don't is because I've been crazy enough, probably I'd have blown my brains out if I'd have had a gun by putting my hand on it at that moment. Since I've been sober. Since I've been an Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been crazy enough that there was something between me, nothing between me and that drink in my cupboard, I'd take it. Because I've been that insane here. Through my own actions, let me clarify that. To my own actions, I have put me in positions where I have been crazy enough to take a drink. My own actions. The I want, I need, I gotta have. Thinking I gotta go somewhere here. Thinking I gotta get someplace here. For Christ's sakes. When I quit trying to get anything around here, I've been given it all. When I quit trying to go anywhere, I've been all over the world. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. And all I do is go sit in seats and meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and do what I'm asked to do here. That's all. I don't work at anything. I don't struggle at anything. I don't try to overcome anything. I have a God that takes care of all that. I have a God that removes those defects of character from me. Enough of them make me useful to you and to Him. The rest of them is none of my business. None of my business whatsoever. It ain't none of my business. My business, and my only business, is to live this way. It's my God's business to take care of me. I can't stand here and tell you every meal I've eaten has been a banquet, and every day I've lived out there, I've lived on the sunny side of the street. I've had all kinds of things happen to me. My wife committed suicide when I was 6 years sober. Left me with two little girls. I didn't know how to treat them. I treated them like drunks. It turned out all right. One of them is a registered nurse, three little boys. The other one is an executive at Douglas Aircraft Company, who just now has 21 days sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's been a long, hard ride, too, I'll tell you that. I've been through business failures. I've been through a painful divorce. I've been through the I want, I need, I got to have. I've been through it all. But what my sponsor today tells me is this. That's about as high as you ever get in Alcoholics Anonymous, about the best you ever get around here as a basic human being. But let me tell you something that I've learned recently, because there seems to be a big uprising nowadays of people who seemingly think they have to take something to overcome something, that it's necessary to have to swallow something. It's not mood-altering, let me tell you. Let me tell you this. I've been through a lot of things since I've been sober. Very painful, emotional, self-centered pain since I've been sober. I thank God that I didn't go somewhere and have somebody tell me to take this and you'll overcome it. Because if I'd have done that, I may have been sober. May not, makes no difference. But I've never been able to look back on it now with sober eyes for over 35 years and saw the handiwork of my God working through my life. Although I was closing one door, He was opening another. I would have never seen that because I would have never had to rely on a power greater than myself, a God of my understanding. You see, I relied on chemicals all my life before I got to you. And you introduced me to this God of my very own through this program of recovery and the actions of my sponsor. And now I rely on this God of my own. Pulled me through some scrapes, let me walk on the sunny side of the street. I wish you all that. I feel sorry for any of you who think you have to take something and miss that experience. Because it is necessary. I've been Alcoholics Anonymous all these years, and this is the only therapy that's been introduced in my life. The only type of counseling I've had is from a kind and loving sponsor who's walked before me and led the way. And I'll stand here and tell you tonight that I believe this. I don't believe there's anybody in the face of this earth who lives any better than I do. Oh, I know there's people who have more things than I do, but that doesn't mean they live any better than I do. Because I have a God of my very own. My very own God. Who doesn't favor me above anything. I'm his kid, he treats me like it when I act like it. I have a feeling of love in me for members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of them more than others. Because I'm just human being. I know what it's like to live in total peace for periods of time. I know what it's time to walk out of the darkness and into the sunshine by just coming sitting in meetings. I think it's a wonderful journey. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I pray, God, that you stay here long enough to find out what's wrong with you and to realize you're sitting smack dab in the solution. It's not all things to all people. It's a program of recovery for alcoholics. Because Alcoholics Anonymous always has been, one alcoholic speaks and another alcoholic listens. And those who don't listen aren't alcoholics. Because Alcoholics Anonymous is the language of the heart. What comes from the heart goes to the heart. What enters the head stays in the head. Every living thing I have in my life, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will owe the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. It's a long, long walk from a cell in solitary confinement in a maximum security penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA, and good folks like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you, and God bless you.